Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintech Studio 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Janpro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, Janpro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. Producer Dom, bringing the temperature down a little bit. Trying to mellow everyone out here in the city of Vancouver. Fair enough. As mentioned, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Some good questions coming in, but we have a lot still to get into, kind of left over here from the flurry of activity. And really, again, just like a massive in-season reshaping of the team, of the Vancouver Canucks, from Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford. Where do you want to start?
So I want to start sort of where we left off, because I liked, given the circumstances, and actually even independent, unqualified from the circumstances, the trade with the New York Rangers, right? I when we did our emergency pod, I gave it as significant an endorsement as I can, just from the perspective of, hey, they retained no money.
Yep.
They got multiple really intriguing assets in my mind, and they got what I view as the highest upside asset in the deal. Now, that turned out to be very short-lived. It was a rented first-round pick from the New York Rangers, which they quickly shipped to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Marcus Pettersson, Drew O'Connor, and a little bit of short-term cap flexibility this year and next, right? And obviously, I have more mixed feelings about this. And what this comes down to, I think, is not dissimilar from my reaction to the Filip Hronek trade, right? Which is, I think where I reach anyway, like a fundamental disagreement with the Rutherford Alvin management team or hockey operations group in terms of priorities. And we've talked about this before, like, I think teams need to be a little bit more focused on overall value,
mm-hmm.
and bringing in as much aggregate value as you can into an organization, and being pretty self-confident with your, especially given their pro scouting track record, with the ability to, you know, sell high, replace, reallocate as need be, but really be focused on trying to find upside assets that can truly changed the trajectory of your franchise. Now, Hronek ended up being that to some extent, right? I think, I mean, Myers is killing it with Quinn Hughes. And so I do think there's an element to which, and we'll see and learn more here, if Hughes misses more games or if they decide to play like a Myers-Hughes Pettersson Hronek pair, right? Like, there'll be more opportunities to learn exactly what Hronek can do driving his own pair. But I think it's fair to say what we've seen from Hronek through his first 120-ish, 130 Canucks games, he's given this team one of the top pairs in the league. And so turns out they ended up getting a really high upside asset at a premium position in that last deal. Did they do it again? Maybe, right? This organization, Rutherford and Alvin, are, you know, focused in a different way on a couple things that, you know, I'm talking theory. They're talking real personalities, right? So going out and bringing in Marcus Pettersson, like Swedish, good locker room guy, good leader. When you're trying to exhale and create a more positive environment, like that has to be weighed, right? They're dealing with real stuff and I'm dealing with theories and I'm applying theories to real-time situations. And so obviously there's going to be some disagreement here. I'm trying to be as measured as possible in this criticism. I just view that Rangers pick, the potential exchange value of it, if this Rangers season goes a certain way, my expectation that the Rangers season will continue to go that way, frankly, I just view that as like a potential franchise-altering asset, the sort of thing that I don't want to see the Canucks part with, right? Melvin Fernstrom, yeah, he's just a prospect, but he's playing in the SHL and he's actually producing a bit in his draft plus one. Like, that's a very auspicious sign. I'm not going to say that they gave it up for two rentals because they're going to sign these guys.
Yeah.
But they're also going to sign these guys off of the back foot. They're not going to have the sort of leverage you usually would. Just like how Bo Horvat ended up coming in at 8.5 right after the Canucks traded him to the New York Islanders in very similar circumstances. Like, the Canucks are already pot committed to signing these guys. They're going to get really good deals. And they should get really good deals, given that they're going to be foregoing, if they agree to terms with Vancouver, the ability to hit free agency in this wild market. Nonetheless, I just think that the side of this deal that I'd most want to be on by a mile is the Pittsburgh side of it. Which isn't to say, like, Pittsburgh's also the most flawed of the three teams. But the asset that they just gained, even if the fat part of the bell curve outcome is that, you know, Igor Shesterkin leads the Rangers to the playoffs this year or next, inevitably, like, this Rangers profile, man, all of their key forwards are over 30. They're super shallow on the back end. They haven't played well this season. Columbus is coming, and that looks durable. Montreal is coming, and that looks durable. Ottawa looks awesome, right? Like, and that's not even to get into the Devils, the Panthers, the Leafs, the Washington Capitals, you know, the Lightning, the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, I think true talent-wise, the Rangers might be the 10th best team in the East entering next season. That's exactly the type of unprotected first-round pick I think you want to own, right? So I just worry that this obsession with fit and this organization's inability to prioritize long-term goals. They're always trying to make the playoffs the next year, right? There's always some UFA that they have to appeal to with a sort of a better structured team. I just worry that inhibits this team's ability to chase ceiling the way I think you need to in this league if you're ever going to actually contend for the Stanley Cup. And so I sort of look at that second trade and I look at it askance. I think that's suboptimal. I'd have rather seen the team go out and spend a second and, you know, second plus Fernstrom. Like, does that get you Jake Wallman?
Close.
Does that get you Jake Wallman?
Yeah.
Does that get you, you know, like, I'm totally comfortable with the team having netted those assets using their own first, but I'd rather have the Rangers first than Vancouver's. And yet, you know, I think it's telling. And I think what it tells you is how highly this management group views JT Miller, frankly, how little they wanted to trade him. They're like, the Rangers are like, well, if we're getting JT Miller, we're not too worried about missing the playoffs the next 2 years. And the Canucks are like, yeah,
you're probably not.
Yeah, that's probably a pick in the teens. And the Penguins are like, it probably is, but if it's not, oh, baby. And I just would like to be on the most imaginative side of those types of trades, especially when it comes to, you know, gambling on the potential of franchise altering value, which I just think this Canucks team needs to be more comfortable doing. Even at the expense of short-term fit.
So my reaction to the Pettersson deal, the Marcus Pettersson deal, even though it's exceptionally similar to the Filip Hronek one, I was really down on the Filip Hronek deal. Did not like it, did not care for it. I'm sure some listeners who are listening then will remember our reaction on air to it happening. I'm much more positive about this one, and I think in large part, and as you said, you know, there's always this pending UFA that you're desperately trying to appeal to. And I agree, that's been a vicious cycle for them. I just ultimately get it in the case of Quinn Hughes. You know what I mean? And that's what it comes down to for me, why I'm okay with them going out and spending a premium, getting a guy who they desperately need, right? We all see that they needed another defenseman who's capable of moving the puck, who does fit really well in a number of different ways, including off ice. Because I was not, you know, when they made the Filip Hronek deal, I thought, okay, hey, maybe this is them finally just taking their foot off the gas a little bit, taking a breath, maybe just taking a year to retool, see where things are, get a little younger, collect some assets, do something other than desperately try to make the playoffs for a year and see where you go from there. I didn't have any expectation that that was happening this time. You know what I mean? Because of what Jim Rutherford had said about how much they need to appeal to Quinn Hughes and how much they're not willing to take that step back, it was always going to be, how can we use these assets to immediately help this team? And again, when it's Quinn Hughes, like, one of the things that's happened between now and the Filip Hronek trade when they first made it 2 years ago is Quinn Hughes has gotten even better. He's gotten way better to the point where he's, you know, the reigning Norris Trophy winner. What, still the favorite to win it again? The best defenseman in the league, one of the best players in the league. And I do think that meaningfully changes the calculation you have to make in these situations. I agree with you. Normally in a vacuum, he's like, yeah, collect that high-end asset, man, and see what you're going to, like, bet on it or see what other high-end piece comes available. That's great. I get it in this scenario. When you have Quinn Hughes in this specific contractual situation and what you think you need to do to get him to re-sign with you, it's like, all right, I get it. Go pay the premium and do it.
But you don't think landing a top five pick in 2026 is a more powerful, like, if you're throwing the keep Quinn Hughes Hail Mary, you think Marcus Pedersen and Drew O'Connor are a better lure than, and we've got this guy and we've got McKenna?
I think if you make the playoffs both years with on the back of those guys, yes. Now, McKenna is a different thing.
That's what I'm saying.
But the odds of it being McKenna are so slight.
Sure.
Versus the 100% odds that you have these guys in the lineup.
Right. I mean, I understand that. I just think at the end of the day, you're still throwing a Hail Mary to a guy whose brothers play for a contender in
absolutely
one of the most appealing cities in the world. Like, this is not going to be an easy pitch.
Nope.
We all know that. Now,
because
it's years out. I put it this way. I'm not confident necessarily that they've like got this wrong. I like Marcus Pedersen. You mentioned the blue line stuff, right? Okay. Well, if Elias Pedersen can show well, get blooded a little bit down the stretch here, you bring in a veteran, right? You have Soucy, Pedersen, Hughes, and Elias Pedersen as sort of guys on the left side for next year. Like, that's pretty strong. Hronek, Volander, you probably still need one more guy on the right side because I think you want to blood Volander both down the stretch and next season in a third pair role, ideally, right? Like, you don't want to go into a season relying on him to be a top four guy.
No.
But if you get second pair contributions from him, you're laughing, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you've got Myers. Okay, so there you go. Like, all of a sudden, you're looking at a Canucks team that could come back with something like a Soucy Myers third pair, right?
With Pedersen and Volander kind of waiting in the wings to take over.
Yeah, I think Volander playing with a Soucy Myers third pair, Volander playing with Marcus Pedersen. You sort of use, you know, like, he's going to play third pair minutes, even though he takes line rushes on the second pair.
Yeah.
Boom. I all of a sudden you're pretty interested, I think, in what the Canucks are starting to cook on the blue line. And that's without adding like Sawyer Mineo and some of the other sort of lottery tickets that are Victor Mancini, some of the other lottery tickets that are still out there for this team. Like, I like that work, right? I'm not saying it's going to fail, but I worry that this team's going to end up kind of where they've been routinely for much of the last 6-7 years, you know, where, yeah, you might build a team that's good, but we've seen good teams in this market. What we're looking for is a championship team in this market. I worry that deals like this, while they might help the Canucks be good, I don't know that good keeps Quinn Hughes anyway. You know, like, I think at some point you need to show the hockey world and your own guys that they can win here, win a cup here. Like, I think that's the only way you're going to be able to appeal to a guy with the sorts of options that Hughes is going to have.
Yeah. I don't disagree, except also I just don't think players value. It's one thing if it's Gavin McKenna or Macklin Celebrini or something, but if it's like the seventh pick in 2026, I don't think that moves the needle for players in their prime at all. I think they see that as like, okay, yeah, that kid's going to be really good in 5 years. You know what I mean? I don't think they care about that.
They don't care about that until the guy lights up the World Juniors, or, you know what I mean? Like, you need to do it on a stage.
Yeah. It's just, to me,
CAA client, though, if there's one guy that knows a lot about all of these guys, you know what I mean? Like, you're not talking about a normal, like, you're talking about Quinn Hughes like he's a normal player. And he's not, right? Like, he grew up around agencies. He grew up with his dad being a player development guy for the Maple Leafs, moving into a player development role with CAA. You know, like, Quinn Hughes is interested in, like, contracts, player contracts. He breaks down contracts like he's a hockey blogger. He's just also one of the five best players in the world at the sport. You know, like, this is not a normal person in terms of vision and outlook.
I think the thing is, what we're getting at is, as you said, there are very compelling reasons that Quinn Hughes might want to leave. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the path, like, there's no obvious slam dunk solution. Oh, just do this, and therefore he'll stay in Vancouver. If there was, they'd do that,
right.
But it doesn't exist. You're talking about either option you take is very fraught, I think it's fair to say, and there's a lot of downside.
Josh in Victoria hits the nail on the head saying, is it fair that to say these trades gave the Canucks a high floor but lowered their ceiling? And I think that's right, right? And we've talked about this too, right? Like the Canucks last season were one of those floor teams where it's like, okay, we've got this, we've got that, we've got this. And they had all these outs, but what they didn't have was the ability to generate a control play like an elite team. And I'd like to see a team chase ceiling, because if you can't generate or control play like an elite team, you're never winning anyway, you know? And so that's sort of where I'm at. And I think why we keep bumping into this thing where the Canucks make a move, you know, they land good players. At the end of the day, I think this Canucks lineup is deeper. I don't think they're as... like, I think Dom's model being agnostic on their playoff chances as a result of this trade is dead on, right? I think this team's more interesting to me for the rest of this season than they were before trading JT Miller, clearly the best player in either deal. That's good work. This team's floor should be higher. They're deeper. Their blue line is so much improved. Marcus Pettersson and Drew O'Connor are really good players, and I've always had a ton of time for Filipino. But... As I've sort of obsessed over on this program for years and years, just like the slow nibbling away at the ceiling of what this roster could be is what got this team onto a narrow path in the first place. And I think that path remains narrow today as a result. Like, they briefly made a trade that widened it a little bit again and then got back on doing the tightrope thing, which, you know, they've done it well, right? They've mostly executed it well. Credit to them. They make good moves. They manage the cap with discipline. They are excellent at pro scouting, like really, really good, really sharp. I think these deals are another example of it, and that'll become apparent in time. I just want to see him try and ride on a highway, man. I just want to see him try and use gravity to their benefit as opposed to trying to defy it.
The one part that does concern me is just the sensation that of kind of playing whack-a-mole, right? Like, as you think back even to dealing Horvat, it's like, hey, we've got this strength down the center. Pettersson, Miller, Horvat down the middle. Wow, that's really impressive. Man, but we really need to go find a blue liner. So you turn Horvat into Hronek. It's like, okay, now we got another defenseman to play with Quinn Hughes. Still got top two centers. Ultimately, you have to deal Miller. You trade that. You turn it into another productive blue liner. But now it's like, oh, man, we really need to go find a center here. Are you going to use... you know, Brock Besser, whatever, if you trade him and get assets back and try to flip those into a center. And as you said, it's
and
like...
and you're short a top line winner.
Exactly, right? It's like, oh man, we're still... so ultimately, it's kind of reallocating the talent across the team rather than increasing the talent.
As opposed to aggregating.
Yeah. But so that's why I didn't like the Hronek deal.
Right.
I just think the circumstances have changed much that I get it in this circumstance with Marcus Pettersson. And I also, I don't know, I'm very interested to see what impact having that third... defenseman who's capable of moving the puck is going to have on this team and the way they're able to play.
Texter notes, Drance basically wants a rebuild. Hughes 100% isn't sticking around for that. I'm not saying rebuild. I'm saying focus on value. You know what teams do that? Carolina is the best in the league at it. Value in every deal they make. Right? They haven't missed the playoffs since when? Before the pandemic?
Mm-hmm.
So you can do it. You can do it, absolutely, from a top-notch spot in the league, especially if you're well-coached and have really, really sharp pro scouting, both of which I believe the Canucks have. All the more reason to lean into that approach and not view taking steps back on paper with fear, right? Which I thought the Canucks accomplished, frankly, in the first part of this, the first phase of the Miller deal, and I think got away from in the second part.
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of texts coming in here that we can get into later on in the show. We will get the New York Rangers perspective on the deal, and that's both ends of it, right? That's JT Miller going to the Rangers, what he brings, what he's already brought in the first couple of games, but also what the Canucks are getting in Filip Hedl, and you know some of why it didn't work out for him with the Rangers. Johnny Lazarus from Daily Faceoff will join us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.
Dom is such a Miranda.
Dom was so excited. He's like, what television show does this theme remind you of during the break? And we're like,
blank stares
and
from
he's
me
like,
and Drance.
Sex in the City. Come on, guys.
I'll take your word for
Dom,
it.
Who doesn't know the theme to Sex in the City?
Apparently.
That show's been off the air for like 20 years.
Yeah, but everybody rewatches Sex in the City.
What are you talking about? What circles
you both
are you
have
traveling
in? Don't you both have wives that watch Sex in the City?
I do not.
We also have like me time. You know, like I have me time. She has her time. Like she'll rewatch Sex in the City. I like check in and out. And also, she skips the intros.
Yeah.
Like most people. Yeah, but
you still know.
Dom
there's a lot of holes in this story, Dom.
Dom doesn't just binge Sex in the City. He just binges and watches the intro theme.
Dom's there for the intro, yeah, mostly.
This will be a great intro for Canucks Talk.
Yeah. I was just looking through music. I was like, oh, this sounds like that theme.
You should ask Johnny about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, all right. Now joining us from Daily Faceoff, whenever there's a New York Rangers story, we love to check in with him. And boy, is there this week. Now joining us, he is Johnny Lazarus. Johnny, what's going on, man?
We're not changing topics that easily. I've never seen Sex in the City.
Lies.
But no, I swear to God. But this just I guess shows my age. There's a show on Max called Sex Lives of College Girls that I have binged.
That show is fantastic.
Interesting.
It's a winner. Yeah, I'm a big fan.
I know it probably sounds a lot more inappropriate than it might be.
No, it's just good college comedy.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Coming of age comedy. Now, here's a trivia question for you, Laz. The lead actress is which Oscar nominated actor's sister?
Oh my God! Is the lead actress technically Sarah Jessica Parker? Or?
No. The lead actress of Sex Lives of College Girls.
Oh, Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, there you go. Nailed it.
Yeah, I
knew I could count on you, buddy. Let's go.
Does she also know ball like Timothy Chalamet does?
I don't know if she was like picking Marshall in a bowl game.
She's hilarious in the show.
Yeah, she's really funny. Hey, let's talk about JT Miller's electric two-game debut on Broadway. Is this a lightning bolt for Rangers fans?
I love him. It's been so enjoyable to watch in the last two games, to be honest. And listen, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, the Rangers looked great. They did not look good in both games. They looked pretty bad, I'd say, in the first two periods of last night's game. But there's so many little things with him that, you know, obviously, again, I'm hyper-focused on him in his first two games, right? Like, you know, I'm sitting up there and I'm seeing, like, little things that he does because I don't get to watch JT Miller every night. And, you know, one thing that really stood out to me last night, honestly, that I tried to, like, tweet a video out of, after Will Cooley threw that big hit and got into the fight with Nicholas Hague, JT Miller actually got off the bench and skated across to the box and was like the first one to pat Cooley on the shin pads. I mean, Johnny Brodzinski was like already on the ice, so he did it technically, but JT actually got off the bench and skated over to go do it. You know, and that's a little detail that to me goes such a long way. And, you know, that's also to me, like JT thinking like, oh, this kid's got some guts. This kid's got some game. Like, you know, that's a guy that I think JT will put under his wing. And Will Cooley is a younger, you know, tough son of a B that I think can thrive playing with a guy like JT Miller. So I think that like infectiousness or contagious energy that JT might bring, that intensity, and I'm not saying Cooley hasn't done that before, but that changed the entire game to me. You know, that hit was the turning point, and JT even said it so when I spoke to him in the post game, like how much that hit and that fight just kind of went through the entire bench. And even on the first goal, like the Rangers go on an odd man 4-on-3, and JT Miller is the one who drives the net and brings his defenseman with him, and Fox is able to find that seam to Lafreniere because JT opens that lane up just by a simple net drive. The second goal, Mika gets the rebound off JT coming up the wall, downhill, shot goes through Aiden Hill, and they crash. Like, just little stuff that, honestly, it is – I don't want to say, like, the Rangers haven't had it at all, but he's been so consistent with it in the first two games that it's just infectious.
With what you saw, like – because I watched those two games, of course, and – one of the things that stood out to me was I've seen Miller have games like that 100, 200 times across his Canucks career. I think those were the first two times I'd seen it this season. To what extent does it seem like this is just a player who's finally had an opportunity to exhale?
A lot of it. And I think a lot of it has to do with like his relationships on the team too. Like he's obviously played with Kreider and Mika before, but you know, him and Vinny Trocheck have both been very open about how close they are. You know, I don't want to like over exaggerate what that story might be, but you know, JT told me like he literally moved into Vinny's house without even asking. Like, you know, he just kind of showed up and put all the stuff in there. And, you know, he even said like how special last night was and how he forgot what it was like to be on the home side of things at Madison Square Garden. And, you know, I always think I never played in the NHL, but like, I always have a special place in my heart for UMass. You know, that was the first school that, you know, brought me in the college that recruited me and believed in me. And I think NHL players feel the same about teams that draft them and where they start their careers for the most part. You know, obviously not everyone's intro to the NHL is smooth, but I think JT's was pretty nice for what he was able to do in his early career in New York. And, you know, I think he left in his mid-20s as a kid who was still trying to learn about himself and learn about how to be a pro. And now he's coming back as someone who might have a little bit more gratitude and appreciation for other things he's been through to now be back in a city like this with his best friend and how special it is for not only his family, but Trocheck's family as well. You know, that was something that he really harped on last night when I spoke to him. It's just like how cool it is for them to have, you know, a chance to go for something together in this city.
Going forward with the Rangers, what kind of role do you expect to see JT Miller take on there? I mean, obviously here in Vancouver, he was a massive minutes player, number one center, all situations for much of it, matchup guy. Is he going to slide into pretty much that role, not just for this season, but beyond for the Rangers?
Well, I don't think if the Lions stays together, I think teams will be matching up with him. I don't think he'll be matching up with anybody. Cause that line with, Mika Zibanejad and Artemi Panarin has looked pretty damn good so far. And I actually want to credit, I saw this one hilarious tweet that has nothing to do with JT Miller, but, this girl on Twitter, Rangers Alley, she tweeted like a screenshot of this. I don't know what this is. Maybe it's like a Reddit thing or something, but, for the last like 5 years, the conversation around the deadline has been to find someone that can play on Mika Zibanejad's right wing. And the comment here is, turns out the search for Mika's right wing was himself all along. And I thought that was actually kind of hilarious. Because every deadline, we're talking about who can sit with Mika and Kreider on the top line. Like, that's what it's been here for 5 years. So seeing Mika Zibanejad play right wing and actually have success doing it alongside JT Miller is unbelievable. And the type of player JT is going to be is honestly similar to what we see in Vinny Trocheck. Trocheck is, to me, the captain without a C right now. He touches every aspect of the game. He plays power play, PK, 5-on-6, 6-on-5, 4-on-4, 3-on-3, and I think JT will be the same thing. It's just a guy that you can rely on every time he goes over the boards and, you know, one of the first names that Peter Laviolette will call out, I think, in any situation.
Yeah, you know, one of those things where if I'd been asked to analyze the fit prior to watching Miller make his Rangers debut, one thing I might have said is, you know, I almost thought he would make a bigger difference for a team like LA or Carolina, like one of those teams that controls play pretty well but could use, you know, another skilled guy to sort of put them over the top in terms of their finishing talent, right? And when I sort of saw the Rangers as the destination or thought about it in the past, because it's not like this was out of the blue, given how the last few weeks have unfolded, I would have thought like, well, one thing about going to the Rangers is, do they ever mess with that top power play unit, which has been so good for so long as a group?
Yeah.
Because that's where Miller provides so much value. So to see them immediately just have Miller as a PP1 guy, I think shows that they understand the assignment.
Yeah, it's funny too, because, you know, another thing he had said, and honestly back to your original point, like, you know, I know JT could play the wing also. If he was on that top line with Kopitar and Kempe in LA, I mean, that'd be a scary, scary line.
Right.
Which would be sick. But back to PP1, like, you know, what he was saying like last night, they've had success in the first two games. They're 3-for-5, and they haven't even had a practice yet, you know? And JT, obviously a left-wing or left-handed shot, the first power play unit, for the most part, has been all righties outside of Chris Kreider, who played the net front. So that's an adjustment for all four of the other guys, too, is having a lefty, you know, in that flank, in that strong side flank. Lafreniere has done it a little bit here and there this season, but the Rangers' power play has not been what it's been over the past few years, and JT came in, and it looked beautiful. I mean, last night, that goal they scored, that fourth goal that Panarin ended up bearing, was some of the best passing I've seen all season. And, you know, obviously you have to take the game into account. Vegas is shorthanded in the last, like, 2 minutes. They're probably cheating a little bit offensively, being a little bit more aggressive on the PK, so that's why I think it opens up a little bit. But, you know, I'm not going to take any credit away from that unit. I mean, that passing was unbelievable, and obviously they tied the game in the power play as well from a JT Miller shot too. So having someone who demands the puck and will shoot the puck on the left side, where Mika and Panarin were a little bit more passive, you know, on the half walls, it's going to be an adjustment, but I think an adjustment in a positive way for sure.
So another part of that deal that didn't spend long with the Canucks, but it was the first round pick protected this year, rolls over to a potentially unprotected pick next year from the Rangers. Obviously, the Canucks flip it to the Penguins for Marcus Pettersson, and that's a pretty interesting asset. Obviously, the Rangers not in a playoff spot right now. We all know how much they've struggled. They do add an impact player like JT Miller. Looking to next year, and you know, not just in the context of that pick, but just kind of in general, the reaction to this trade, how concerned are you? How concerned to Rangers fans about adding another over 30 forward to a group that already includes, you know, Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider, Trocheck? Is that, do you see that as a real risk even as early as next year for this team?
I have the unpopular opinion about this, but I frankly don't really care. I think the NHL is changing a little bit, and I think a lot of that has to do with Kelly McCrimmon in Vegas. You know, I don't believe that they're an organization that believes in building through the draft. If you have a destination that players want to go to, you can find a way to get the good players. And to me, the Rangers right now, obviously, they have, you know, 1 year left of Artemi Panarin's contract. Igor Shesterkin's contract kicks in next year. You know, Adam Fox at $9.5 million for another 3-4 seasons. Like, I don't think they're trying to waste any of those years. And to me, you know, people will knock Chris Drury, but at least you have a GM who's aggressive and trying to put together a competitive roster and will do whatever it takes to get who he feels are the best players. It doesn't always work, but I'd rather have a GM that's aggressive and willing to do things than someone who sits back and doesn't make any decisions. And again, like, that is me saying that I think the Rangers are still going for it next year. I think they're going to go for it even this year. And, you know, who wouldn't want that as a fan, you know, having a GM that wants to go for it every year? And we see teams that try to rebuild and try to knock it down and build it back up, and it doesn't always work. Like, look at Buffalo. Look at what Chicago's going through right now. Like, it doesn't always – it's not successful on either side of the spectrum, right? Like, you know, every team is different the way they operate. The Florida Panthers, you know, made a big trade a couple of years ago. It turned out well for them. Vegas Golden Knights, like I mentioned before, we've seen what they've been able to do. Sure, Colorado and Tampa were able to draft some elite talent, but those guys do not grow on trees. You know, we haven't really seen, you know, obviously Bedard has struggled this year and Macklin Subbring has been great, but, you know, I mean, maybe you guys disagree. I don't know how you feel about it, but that's my own thinking of when you are an organization like the New York Rangers and you know players want to come play for you, it makes it a little bit easier to sacrifice future assets and try to get players that are NHL players now to come in and try to help you win. And I know it hasn't worked. They've won one cup in 84 years or 85 years, I guess. So I know how stupid I might sound, but I'm going to stand by that and die on that hill.
Canucks fans would take one Stanley Cup in 85 years. So I don't know about that.
It's so hard. One team wins. It's just one team. Yep. It's so hard.
It is rough. Hey, Filip Hedl scores in his debut, showed some emotion. Yeah. Think he played a game that generally looked fast, ingratiated himself pretty well to Canucks fans, handled a pretty big opportunity well through at least one game. What can you tell Canucks fans about Hedl as a guy who's watched him closely over the years?
He's a pleasure to watch. I didn't get to see much of that game. I saw like the last 5 minutes of regulation and overtime in that game last night, so I'm not going to sit here and say how he looked. But Filip Hedl, like, there were moments. And honestly, he might have been the missing piece last year to this team. Like, the Rangers in that series against Florida, I believe games 3 through 6 are all one-goal games, and their third line couldn't score. And Filip Hedl was a guy that can score goals. So you add Filip Hedl to the mix last year, one goal can change the entire direction of a series. And I really do think that they could have used him, or a healthy version of him. I know he played maybe a game or two when he wasn't fully healthy. But, you know, he skates really well. His ability to get the puck from the D zone into the offensive zone is some of the, you know, better I've seen in the NHL as far as getting through the neutral zone with speed and possession and creating off the rush. He's got a great shot. He's very confident in himself also. Even when he's struggling, he has a little bit of an aura about him, and the way he speaks about himself, he knows his ability. You know, he seems like a good teammate. Obviously, I have not been teammates with him, but from everything I've gathered, the guys like him in the room. And, you know, he's an upbeat guy. So I do think it's a great add for the Canucks. Do I think the Canucks probably still could have gotten more as a return? Yes. I thought Zach Jones would have been a part of that, or Jimmy Vesey, to be honest. But, you know, in Filip Hedl, you're getting a solid number two center who wants to prove that he's a number two center, because the past couple of years he's been a number three. Although I will add one caveat. He was the second line center with Panarin and Lafreniere last year before getting injured. And then Trocheck obviously ran away with that job. So he's got a lot to prove still at a mid-20s age. And I'm sure he's fired up for a fresh start.
Yeah, with Hedl, as you mentioned, you know, getting an opportunity as a second line center, but then he's injured and that ends up going to Trocheck and he's back down as the third line guy. Has it really just been injuries that have kind of prevented him from getting that extra opportunity, or are there things beyond that in his game which have kind of, you know, kept him in that 14 minute a night role that he's had for most of his career?
Well, it's injuries. It's how well that first power play unit's clicked. You know, we talked about it. It's hard to change something up that's done as well as that power play unit has in the past few years. So it is a little bit of limited opportunity just because of the guys in front of him. Doesn't mean he wasn't deserving of it. It's just sometimes, you know, coaches lean towards the veterans that they trust more. You know how hockey can be sometimes, and that's just, to me, the way it goes. But it hasn't been for a lack of opportunity. Like, the opportunities have been there, and he's done well with the opportunities. He's done well in playoffs. I guess just, like, logistically, things haven't gone his way, and I do think that is mostly because of injury, not because of, you know, a lack of trust and whatnot. You know, I don't think if that injury doesn't happen last year, you know, who knows how that line ends up looking. I believe Hedl had 6 points in the first 10 games alongside those two. So they could have had just as successful of a season as Trocheck did with them. But, you know, I guess we'll never really know that answer.
Victor Mancini, kind of the wild card in this. I don't think a name that a lot of Canucks fans, I wasn't familiar with until we hear that he's part of the deal. Now, he did play 15 games earlier this year with the Rangers, so spent most of the season in the AHL. You know, some interesting tools, kind of a non-traditional path to the NHL. What can you tell us about Mancini?
Well, he came out of Nebraska, Omaha, and made the team out of camp this year, which was like the biggest surprise of training camp. Big physical right shot defenseman, has some offense to his game too. You know, again, another guy who still has a lot to prove. So he's hungry. You're getting two guys that truly have a lot of faith in themselves that they are, you know, Filip Hedl obviously is an everyday NHLer, and Mancini believes that he will be an everyday NHLer. So I guess there's a lot of positives in that when you have, you know, two guys with that kind of attitude. But Mancini's tough. You know, he moves well. He'll throw the body. He'll block shots. So he'll do kind of everything that a coach would want a player to do. So I do think he'll be well-liked pretty early on. And, you know, it's sad that we didn't get a chance to see what he could have done in New York, but I think Vancouver will be a solid fit for him as well.
Johnny, appreciate it, man. Always always good to chat with you, and enjoy the JT Miller experience with the Rangers.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And go check out Sex Lives of College Girls. You haven't yet.
Yeah, it's on Crave in Canada, so there you go.
There you go.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Johnny. That is Johnny Lazarus from Daily Faceoff weighing in.
You should add context to that in case people joined mid-segment.
It's like, oh, it's a television show on HBO Max.
Like, how did you know my search history, Johnny?
Sex Lives of College Girls is a very good show. Well worth your time.
Hilarious. Have you guys watched Secret Lives of Mormon Wives?
No. No, but I mean, I've like followed the cultural reaction. People love it.
Who hasn't?
People love it a lot.
I have not followed the cultural reaction to that show.
Big Utah HC fans on that
yes,
show.
Yes.
Are they?
I don't know.
Oh.
It would make sense.
I don't know. It's like Don't F with Cats on Netflix. You ever watch that documentary?
Nope.
Can't say I have.
The musical or animal?
No, it's anyway, one of the main internet sleuths who exposes a serial killer torturing cats on YouTube is like the biggest Vegas Golden Knights fan, and like every interview, every like sit down she gives, she's wearing different Vegas Golden Knights gear, and I'm just like a way too online hockey fan. Like, you are my people.
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send
also,
your
you should
texts
watch
in
it, by the way, really good. Like, you'll
it's traumatizing.
You'll watch it in an evening.
Great.
Yeah.
Jamie wants to know part of this combo.
I don't watch a lot of shows, to be perfectly honest. Not a big show guy.
What do you do for time?
Sports,
for, with
man.
Your
he
time?
Watches sports. And what's it called? Bluey?
Well, my daughters watch Bluey. I'm not watching a lot of Bluey.
Oh, it's on.
the cliffhanger at the end of Bluey season 4. I can't wait till October.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Read, play video games, watch sports.
Ooh, spend
read.
Time
watch
your
movies.
Family.
Yeah, spend time with my family. An elitist over here. Yeah, that's right. I have a library card, guys. Believe it or not.
Do you have the app?
What, Libby?
Yeah.
No.
Oh,
well, I do, but I don't it. Have, I don't really like the e-reader system as much.
Apple
not
Books?
Not as much of a fan of it.
No?
Yeah, that's
oh,
right.
Since we're talking about reading, I need to ask you a very important question because you two are very highbrow. You're very smart.
I'm the only one who reads, apparently.
I don't even know how to read.
But you write.
You dictate all your articles yeah. to Izzy, and he writes it down.
That's a good point. How would I write if I don't read?
If I listen...
You've exposed my lie.
If I listen to an audiobook, have I read it?
No, you've listened to it.
Yeah.
So I can't say I've read Shoe Dog because I've listened to Shoe Dog?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, you know it, but I don't...
Right?
Like, I would say I listened to it, but there's no shame in that.
I was told it. I think you were told it. I think you got told Shoe
you
Dog.
Experienced it.
Yeah.
Like, I think you're saying I don't
your
want people
iPhone
to look down on
story.
Me for having not read it.
I don't want to be disingenuous, you know? I can't just I can't sit here and be like, "Hey,
say,
I read Shoe Dog."
I would just
like,
"Oh, I listened to the audiobook."
Yeah, or I
have to preface.
Had it told to me by my iPhone. No one will look at you like you're
my
weird.
iPhone
if you say,
read
my
it to
iPhone
me.
iPhone told me that story. People will just completely understand.
Like, if someone asked me, like, "Hey, have you read the Steve Jobs documentary or
have you
biography?"
Read the Steve Jobs documentary
biography. I'd have to be like, "Yes," but also
no.
You just
say no.
To
I
it.
Listened to the audiobook.
Yeah.
I also I
but there's
love
nothing
a
wrong
good
with
audiobook.
That.
The right. old the old Roald Dahl, Fantastic Mr. Fox audiobook. Strong recommend.
What a pull.
I loved it when I was a kid. Every time I'd go up to Whistler or whatever, I'd like need to hear it.
It's like a podcast. It's great.
Yeah, rocks. Big audiobook guy.
Somebody, oh, this is a good question. Tyler says, if I read Harry Potter to my child, does that mean that he read it?
No.
No. He had it read
told
to him. Much like an audiobook.
Correct.
It's like an in-person, a live audiobook taping.
What did they do before audiobooks?
Live readings in coffee shops. When's the last time you went to a live reading?
A live audiobook reading? It's been a while.
A live
haven't
audio
done that.
Audiobook reading. Is that what you'd call it now? It's just a live reading. Audiobook. It's like calling it an ATM machine.
A live audiobook performance.
Oh, yeah? And then did you drive your horseless carriage to the live audiobook reading? My God.
Yeah, but like if we did a live show, we'd call it a live podcast. We wouldn't call it like a live discussion, even though that's what we're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's not a live audiobook reading if you're just reading from your book. It's just a reading. A live podcast is still going to be recorded.
It's a
and
book
go up.
In audio form.
If we weren't recording it, we would call it a
live
discussion.
Show. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A symposium, perhaps.
Yeah.
I
I'm going to be honest. I don't care about this. I don't care about this discussion. So we're going to move on.
You and our listeners
yes,
alike.
Exactly.
Let's go to break.
We'll take a break. We'll get back in. To the real stuff, the hockey stuff, the Canucks stuff, take some of your questions, and lots more to get into here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. To Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. That was a roller coaster read. I learned a lot.
I love Beat Bobby Flay, by the way. I love rooting against Bobby Flay. So much fun.
Speaking of HBO shows that everybody's watched.
Yes.
The end of like the last few seasons of Entourage where Ari's wife is involved with Bobby Flay.
I've never seen an episode of Entourage.
Oh my gosh. Okay, moving on.
Jamie really doesn't watch shows.
And I probably never will.
No, now you're too old.
Didn't interest me.
You know what it is? And it's actually funny that Dom brought up both Entourage and Sex and the City today. Because it's Entourage the man's, is male,
yeah,
Sex
yeah,
and the
yeah,
City.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. Including the fact that it's like completely surface level bozo stuff, right? Like,
yes.
It's perfect.
I like to turn my brain off and laugh, man. Yeah.
Dude, I'm 0% judging you. I've watched all of Entourage.
Grant also likes to turn his brain off and laugh.
By the way, the Jess Mancini line in Entourage, you can't repeat it on air, but it's the first thing I thought of when they traded for Mancini.
Fair.
All right, 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line, and some questions coming in specifically about Philip Hedel. This one unsigned. I don't read them both here, but this one unsigned. How worried should the Canucks be regarding Hedel's health? And then Austin in Langley texts in, how much did the Canucks target Hedel as opposed to he's just a guy the Rangers had? For example, if they weren't trading JT, would they still have liked went after a guy like Hedel, or was he just a piece that worked in the trade? Which is kind of an interesting question.
Yeah,
actually.
Well, I've got stuff to say about both of his questions. So the first one is the Canucks did due diligence, obviously, into Philip Hedel's. Now, if you go read all the articles about Hedel's head injuries in the past, you'll read a lot of suspected concussion. There is an unconfirmed element to what Hedel has dealt with across the last few years. And so the Canucks did their due diligence here, and essentially they have a comfort level well beyond the more facile takes based on what's been reported. Okay. Now, digging around on this, since I understood that late Friday, I think there's an explanation or there's something here that I think the player and his camp have been like trying to figure out a way to discuss. But essentially so I don't know the full picture yet.
Yeah.
I'm just, here's what I know. I'm trying to present it as honestly as I can. There's an element here that is as yet unexplained. And I think that dovetails with why the Canucks felt pretty comfortable acquiring Hedel and don't view him as an injury risk the way most analysts breaking down this trade do. Okay. I'll get to the bottom of it. I just haven't yet. So that's my standing update for you in the meantime. In terms of how the Canucks view the player. So, I mean, Hedel's been involved in years worth of JT Miller trade talks.
3 years of JT Miller trade conversations.
And, you know, look, the Canucks don't, like, when they had both Horvat and Miller expiring on the same timeline, right, they were always going to keep one. Right? No matter what someone like me thought, you know, they should deal both. They were always going to keep one. They decided Miller. They traded Horvat. So they needed to get a center back for Miller. And I think that's the fundamental reason why, whether they traded Miller to New York in 2022 or in 2025, they were going to get Hedel back. He's been sort of a fixture in talks and these packages. I think the organization is high on the player. They've kept tabs on him. He was obviously a piece they wanted. But, you know, I'd say, like, the organization has loved this player and has been tracking him. They've been tracking him with interest, but I think it's somewhat qualified. I don't think the organization views him as the, like, long-term answer necessarily as a first line or second line center of the future. I think he'll have the opportunity to prove to them that he can hack it. But the organization, I think, suspects going into this relationship that, hey, tasking him with being our everyday second line center might be a stretch. That might be something that he can grow into, but it also might be something where the seams begin to show, right? He's one of those players who's shown that he can do a really good job defensively and be productive offensively. He's a player that seems to struggle to do both at the same time, right? Or at least has historically in his career. Organization obviously loves the size, the speed, the offensive creativity. They think there's defensive game that they can work with. I think there's hope that he can emerge as more, you know, at the age of 25 than he's been to this point in his career, especially if he can stay healthy and durable. But, you know, I think there are some seams there. I think the truth is that the organization comes out of these deals saying, we need a long-term upgrade at center. We need to find a long-term upgrade at center, you know, either now or later. But going forward, if we're going to get to where we want to go, we're going to need Pettersson, Hedl, and probably another guy. And so...
Yeah, another guy better than Hedl is the idea.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think they like him. I think you'd be, if you're like, they've loved this player, I think you'd be selling it a little hard, right? I think there's, it's somewhat more qualified than that, somewhat more nuanced than that, as you might expect.
Yeah, and the future for Hedl is going to be really fascinating. I mean, one, to see what he can do with a bigger opportunity, because, I mean, we'll see what they're able to do between now and the trade deadline, but as much as a top priority for the team is go out and try to find that upgrade at center, go out and try to find the, you know, mid-20s center who's better than Filip Hedl, that's a lot easier said than done. So in the here and now, he's likely going to get a chance to play second line center type minutes. You know, they didn't get a power play last night, but I'm going to be very interested to see if they work him in on the power play at some point now with JT Miller out, if that becomes something he gets a little bit more of an opportunity to do. But then there's also the conversation, I mean, if you're out there trying to acquire a center and the other team wants a center back, like, is he something you would consider flipping? If you get the piece, does he have a future on the wing for you at some point? I think there's a lot of interesting ways that the Filip Hedl experience could go. But first and foremost, he's going to have a significant opportunity here to play more minutes, play a bigger role than he really got to on any sort of consistent basis with the Rangers. And it's going to be interesting to see what he does with that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about Hedl to bear in mind, okay? More offensive than defensive in terms of his two-way impact, in terms of where he helps a team generate and control play, which is actually, his five-on-five profile is almost identical, frankly, to JT Miller's. Like, almost identical across a large sample of games, like across 2,500-plus minutes. In Hedl's case, it'd be like 5,000 minutes for JT Miller since, let's say, the pandemic abbreviated 56-game season. One thing that Miller and Hedl have in common, okay, over the last five NHL seasons, there are 83 NHL forwards who have produced more than 2 points per hour at 5-on-5, okay? And Hedl's one of them. Now, he's low end. He ranks 80th, but he is one of them, and so is Miller. Miller ranks 50th, you know, give an extra 0.2 of a point per hour. He's a very talented player. Like, this is a very talented rate-scoring ace, the way that he's been utilized with the Rangers over the years. You know, he spent a large section of his career playing for Gerard Gallant, who doesn't really play young players willingly. Right, so he sort of got stuck on that kid third line that actually performed pretty well, but ultimately, I think their development was stunted, which is why Lafreniere hasn't taken off the way, at least in my opinion, partly why Lafreniere hasn't taken off like a rocket ship the way I keep expecting him to.
Capo never did, yeah.
And well, he's been unlocked in Seattle now, right? So you're hoping that Hedl moves on and you get the same impact from him getting a fresh start that the Seattle Kraken down the I-5 has gotten out of his former linemate. And we'll see if, in fact, that comes to pass. There's a lot to like about Hedl's profile in terms of it. You know, there's a lot of reasons why he hasn't reached his potential. Some of them are injury related. Some of those injury red flags maybe have been overstated. Age, size, skill set, production profile, especially in sort of rate stat minutes. He's absolutely a guy who could break out here. I think absolutely. And I thought we saw some really promising flashes in his first game with Vancouver.
Okay, some other things I wanted to get to, questions coming out of the weekend and all the moves the Canucks made. One, Brock Besser. Now, he's got the kind of guy in the spotlight to watch leading up to the trade deadline in early March. And I know you noted this. I noted it on the air on Saturday with Josh as well after listening to Patrick Alvin. Very, very striking to hear the difference between, well, Marcus Pedersen's going to be a priority for us, right? And we're still evaluating Brock Besser. I don't know how much that's like, oh, we're evaluating what we think of him as a player versus we're evaluating how he fits long term for us. I also think it's notable. You look at the players they brought in. Hedl has speed. O'Connor has speed. Marcus Pedersen helps them move the puck and play faster from the back end. I wonder if there is, you know, we all know Jim Rutherford loves his fast players, but if there's also more of a focused desire to kind of make that a big part of their identity, what do you expect, or what's the latest you're hearing? You know, how, what's your sense of where this Brock Besser situation is going, the pending unrestricted free agent going in to the trade deadline?
So, look, for me, we're still evaluating, and I heard similar things privately on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember exactly how I phrased it in my Saturday column on the deal, but I touched on this. I'm just going to pull it up. Okay, so here's the two things that I heard about Besser. And I heard about it in the context of how the Canucks handle the time between now and the deadline. Okay, now here's what I sort of can gather. Making the playoffs, always an organizational priority in Vancouver, mm-hmm. right? But the club's performance between now and March 7th, right? Like Rutherford and Patrick Alvin have time, they're going to use it, right? The club's performance between now and March 7th will dictate a fair bit of what the club decides to do. So four key expiring UFAs here, all of which could have, I think, meaningful exchange value as rental pieces if the Canucks were to deal them, albeit on very different scales.
Yes.
So on the low end, we're talking Noah Juulsen. Never underestimate what teams will pay for a right-handed, penalty-killing, ace physical defenseman, you know, to load up on depth. Never underestimate. I think you could get a fifth or a sixth.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Forbert, I think you could get a fourth or a fifth. Pugh Suter?
Depth defenseman gets a fourth-round pick is not a hot take. That's like the opposite of a hot take.
I kind of like it, though. It's like Derek Forbert's trade value.
The least spicy take in this show's history.
You know what, though?
I think they could get a fourth or a fifth for this guy.
Whoa! You say this, and then it's going to be 11:30 on trade deadline day, and we're going to be sitting here breathlessly covering the Derek Forbert sweepstakes. So careful what you wish for, brother. Careful.
No, I love that stuff.
Careful.
That's awesome.
Careful what you make fun of the Lasers for including. Pugh Suter, could you get a second for Pugh Suter?
Maybe.
If you took back some money.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe.
Two-thirds, something like that. You know what I mean?
Two-thirds.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, you're getting greedy.
Would you rather have a second or two-thirds?
Second, obviously.
Yeah.
And then Brock Besser. Okay, so the club does seem to be open to keeping their pending UFAs, Suter, Forbert, and company around as own rentals, okay? But that's going to be contingent on how the club performs here, right? If the club's comfortable with their odds of making the playoffs and where their team game's tracking, Canucks will likely pass through the deadline with their pending UFAs on the roster, regardless of whether they have extensions in hand with some of those guys. Now, Besser is the big decision and exists in a different bucket,
yes,
as he should, from Juulsen, Forbert, and Pugh Suter. Now, we're evaluating the longest tenured Canuck. Doesn't really pass our sniff test, does it?
No, that's what I meant. Like, it's not as if they're evaluating Brock Besser's game. But can you be, is it fair to say that you could be evaluating how he fits on a long-term deal with your team? You know what I mean?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I think you know who he is.
I think you know who he is.
No, no, no. But you're evaluating, okay, what will it cost on his next deal? What do we think we can get him for? And does that fit in our plans? That's what they're evaluating,
isn't it? I heard privately that the Canucks were still evaluating Besser, and I took that to mean that while they may still like the player, there's at least a level of reticence, mm-hmm. right? Look, the cap's going up to 95.5. Okay, Brock Besser is going to be behind Ehlers, Rantanen, and Marner in line, but he's going to be the next best thing. And a lot of teams are going to be in on bidding for Mikko Rantanen and
Mitch Marner,
Ehlers, and mm-hmm. Marner. And one of those teams is going to strike out, and their next call is going to be to Brock Besser's representative, Ben Hankinson, and the offers are going to get dizzying, I would expect. 8 years for Brock Besser. 8 years for Brock Besser. Are you comfortable with that? Is the organization comfortable with that?
Yeah.
We're still evaluating. That leads me to suspect that the organization is like, that's one of those. You better be sure, man. You better know pretty quick. You don't need to evaluate a guy that's been on the team for 8 years for another 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks to determine whether or not you're comfortable giving them an 8-year deal. Like, you know, or you don't. You know, or you don't, you know, like you're either like, yep, we need to do everything we can to keep him, or you're or the meal is too big for your appetite. And so me reading between the lines, I still suspect that Besser is going to be dealt here. That's my guess, informed guess, obviously, but a guess, not a report. I think the organization, I think what Alvin says is what I'm hearing privately too. The organization's still evaluating it. To me, that is tepid enough that I sort of look at it as trending toward a player being sold.
I just have a really hard time seeing them keeping him as their own rental, even if they're in a playoff spot.
I don't think he... So
yeah, you're saying that's... Like, I know they Alvin left the door open to that. Man, you only do that if you think, oh, okay, we actually will be able to get a deal done. We're just going to do it after the deadline.
I think that's right. Or I think if the club like goes on like a 10-game win streak starting now, you know what I mean, through the deadline, something like that.
Even then, man,
like you go to Vegas, so you come back from the Four Nations,
yeah.
Like you beat Colorado here, you know, you beat San Jose,
Toronto,
and you come back and you get three wins against Utah, Vegas, and the two LA teams on the other side of the break, and Seattle. Let's say you get four wins across those five games. Does that move you in any way?
Not really.
No,
frankly. Like, I think
I agree.
I think you can probably make the playoffs without Brock Besser. If that's your goal, if you're like, we really just want to make the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I mean, you just need to outlast Calgary.
Yeah.
And Vancouver's got a way better blue line and more high-end talent.
And so, okay, hey, nice win streak. Like, unless you all of a sudden think you're Stanley Cup contenders.
Really gutty performance by Calgary. I don't know if you saw the game last night after the Canucks game ended, but playing the second leg of a back-to-back on the road in Seattle. And I thought that was a pretty, like, they get the 3-0 lead. They allow a bouncer 3-2 goal, like just an unlucky bounce 3-2 goal. They were actually playing pretty well. And then immediately Dan Vladar lifts a puck from behind the net, like he's trying to clear it off the glass over the and from that point on, the Flames played very nearly flawless hockey. It was awesome. I thought that was a really gutty win for that team, but I still think the Canucks are materially better even without JT Miller.
Before we get out of here, the other player that kind of popped into my mind listening to Alvin and kind of digesting the moves over the weekend, and he was a scratch last night, it's Carson Soucy. And now with Quinn Hughes obviously holding down the left side, Marcus Pettersson brought in on the left side, and he's going to be a priority for them to re-sign. You'd expect that deal to get done. That's going to the future. But even in the here and now, you have Derek Forbort. You have Elias Pettersson, DPD, who looks like he's going to make a demand for more minutes. He's a left shot defenseman. Carson Soucy, one more year left on his deal. He has a full no trade clause this year, but it converts on July 1st to a 10-team modified no trade deal. I'm very curious to see, one, what his role looks like now. Can he get in the lineup even on a consistent basis? And if he does, does a reduced role help him kind of refine some of his game, which we saw last season? And if that doesn't happen, even with the no trade clause, is there a possibility Carson Soucy could be someone they look to move to free up some cap space either now before the trade deadline or at least when the no trade clause becomes a modified one in the summer? What do you think about that?
So, sorry, this is Carson Soucy. Yeah, I mean, so Soucy has the full no trade this year and young family, right? Like a very young family and Western Canadian roots,
yeah.
Right? Like wanted to stay West. Probably left some money on the table to stay West
to get that no trade clause
and get this level of security given the, you know, like, I mean, I think they had twins right before his first Canucks training camp, right? Like when he signed with the Canucks, he had like a wife who was like 7 months pregnant, right? Mm-hmm. Like for a lot of these players, right? Those family priorities, just like they would for you or your brother or anyone in your
massive.
Life is everything.
Yeah.
So I would say zero chance he's getting dealt this season. Now, being healthy scratched, really being made to feel like you're not wanted, if that's the direction this goes, that could change it. But, and I don't know what's happened to Carson Soucy's game this year. This team's high on this player. Like, I don't think that this is a situation where he's not wanted. Because that can change everything from a player's perspective. Mm-hmm. As much as family's the priority, like,
you want to be successful in your career.
You don't want
also.
You're not playing and you're in and out of the line. I mean, that all bets can be off for a player waiving their no trade clause or no move clause in those sorts of situations. I don't think we're there. I just don't think we're there with Carson Soucy. I think his play's been uneven. I don't know what's up with his game. Like, I can't diagnose it. It doesn't look like a physical limitation, but I will be 0% surprised if we find out that he's been battling through something, just given how night to night, I don't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
He was so steady for them last year. Like he was an impactful second pair defenseman for this team last year.
Yeah.
And he's been, you know, in tough most nights. He had like one good month in November. So I don't know what's going on with his game. But I do know that this club still believes in his defensive ability and overall solidity. Then you get to the sort of other side of this, which is, to what extent do you want to prioritize, you know, for example, do you want to make sure Forbert's a mainstay in your lineup so that you can maximize his value ahead of the deadline? Do you,
how much do you want to get Pedersen, DPD, in the lineup?
That's what I'm saying. Right?
Mancini, like, how much do you want to get these guys in the lineup?
How comfortable are you playing Soucy on the right side? Are you comfortable going with a Forbert-Soucy third pair or a Pedersen-Soucy third pair? So a lot of complications in terms of Soucy's profile here, but I still think the club believes in him, just given how high they've been on him, you know, across the last
and again, I do wonder reduced role with Pedersen in the lineup, if that can give him some space to kind of refine his game and reestablish him himself as a player here with the Canucks. All right, that's Canucks talk for today. We're back tomorrow on a Canucks game day. Very exciting. They play the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow, and we'll be here to break it all down on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.